Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Our underwriters for Art in the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, regional art patron Mary Levan, and our landlord, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. Thank you for your generous support. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president of radio operations at Lakeshore Public Radio. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or through our Facebook page. Art on the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you this great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight someone who's been with us many times before. She is also Beverly Shores Museum president there on US 12, but also she's widely traveled, lives and creates things about the Indiana Dunes. She paints using fibers and creates that, and she has a new exhibit coming up. Susie Vance, welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you very much, Larry and Esther. It's delightful to be here.
It's always Nothing glad to Susie. Have you. So tell us about, you have an exhibit coming up. And
I do.
So tell us a little about that. That'll be where it is and when it is. It's actually just opened last weekend. It was the opening, but it's going to be running all month.
It's at the Marshall J. Center for the Arts in Miller. And it is a delightful location, actually a pretty large gallery. And they asked me if I, over a year ago, if I would be willing to exhibit there. And every one of my other exhibits after about February disappeared. And this one, lo and behold, actually, I think is going to happen, which is amazing. And I'm going to have my fiber art, my photography, and my weaving in the show.
What does your photography consist of?
Years ago, I started to take morning pictures and put them on Facebook. And people became, out of the woodwork, I'd walk down the street. Oh, I saw your picture. That was great. Blah, blah, blah. And what I finally started doing was haiku poetry to go with the photography. And last year, I did a piece about what is fondly referred to as the Lagoni Preserve in Beverly Shores. I walked through the preserve. I took pictures and people have asked me if I doctored them in any way because they have blue hues. I'll give you an example. These
And I didn't adjust the color at all. Anyway, I wrote a haiku poem that goes, each one of the pictures, there are 12, has a haiku poem with it. And they also have a running poetry that runs from the beginning to the end.
Do you have the poem available for the photo you just showed us?
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Do you want
to? We'd love to hear it.
Can we hear it?
Sure.
Have you got a minute?
Sure.
Hold on. It's actually the third page of a zine I did. And the running line in the long poem is to witness the forest. And the haiku is quiet, still, silence, being inside and outside. Together we are one.
Oh, lovely.
Beautiful. I think I actually have that zine you gave me some years ago or a couple of years ago. So.
I probably did.
So the show's running till when?
It's running till the 29th of November, and they're open on Saturdays and Sundays. You can check their hours on the website.
Okay. And what do you have planned after this? Anything down
after
the road?
After this, I'm assuming things turned around a little. I have two shows that I was supposed to do in Grand Rapids this year, got postponed to next year.
I'd like to ask a question about the exhibit that you have going on.
Sure.
Which is, how far back, what is the range in age from the work? Like, where does the work, what is the span of time?
The work covers about 2 years worth of work, I think.
Great.
Would be fair to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
And briefly, update us a little bit on the depot, as you are the Madam President over there.
The depot is wonderful, and actually, if we go into next year and this continues, we're going to have a virtual exhibit. We haven't done that yet, although you can see a lot of the museum things on our website, and we are about to start. There's a new website coming. It's moments away, and so we're pretty excited about that.
And you've been closed all this time, pretty much. I mean, it's hard to do.
No, not pretty much. We have been closed.
Yeah.
What we've had is an open gift shop. And that happened because the 5x5 went online. And from that, out of that, grew the gift shop online. So it's pretty fun.
And you're involved with area artists, too. So there's an exhibit going with them currently.
Yes, a virtual exhibit. Carol Estes has done a wonderful job putting us all together. I think she's a saint because she decided to take it on, and she literally has gone to every artist's home who didn't do their own video and done a video of them so that she could put their video and their work on the website. So that's really fabulous.
She's a true dynamo.
She's amazing. She's as amazing in the field of photography in terms of her energy as Susan Atwell is in fiber. It's just really fun to watch.
Well, I think that's about all the time we have, Susie. It's going to be at the Marshall Gardner Center continuing through November 29th. Susie Vance's whole exhibit. So if you get a chance, get by there in Miller, right in the little Miller section there. Susie, thank you for being on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Mary and Esther, thank you for having me.
Now a very special musical treat during the pandemic from Billy and Renee Foster, their new song called Virus.
Corona, Corona, stay at home if you can. Corona is on the scene. The life you say could be yours or one of your family. Put on your mask, pull on your gloves. Don't take a chance and spread this virus. Essential workers, this really shows that they are our real heroes. Thank you. Corona is on the scene. The life you say could be yours or one of your family. Put on your mask, pull on your gloves. Don't take a chance and spread this virus. Social distance, it's up to you. We can save lives, it's true.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And now we welcome to Art in the Air Janine Harrison, who wrote a poetry collection, Weight of Silence, among her other works. Freelance writes, teaches creative writing at Calumet College of St. Joseph, and she's a teaching artist and activist throughout the Chicagoland, along with her husband, Michael Poore, whose short fiction appeared in Glimmer Train South Review. And we're also going to have her daughter on to probably give us an insight of this artistic and literary couple, Gianna. Please welcome them to Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone.
Thank you very much, Larry. Good to be here.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, well, we'll first start with you, Michael. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got from where you were to where you are now, and, you know, your whole, like, kind of life journey.
Well, where I was Ohio, and somewhere along the line, when I was in high school, I met a woman, not Janine, sorry, who was from this area, and after a couple of years, I moved up here, and we got married. Then we swiftly got unmarried. But while that was happening, my mother-in-law got me a job at the junior high school where I work and where I still, 20-odd years later, teach sixth grade. And while all that was going on, I wrote a bunch of short stories and now find myself with three books under my belt.
So, but what about elementary school and high school? Were you writing then? I mean, when did it hit you?
I'm glad you asked. I had a fifth grade teacher named John Gibbons who decided that we were going to have a creative writing class every other Friday. And I wrote a story for him about Thanksgiving from the turkey's point of view. And next year it was published in the local paper. And all the local elementary teachers made their kids write essays about it. And as a result, the next year when I went to junior high, I almost got beaten up because I was that guy who wrote that dumb story that they all had to write an essay about. So that was kind of the beginning.
So tell us a little bit about where you went to college and things like that, too. We kind of skipped over that.
Oh, all right. I went to college at Ohio University for a long time. I had a really great time in college, and it sort of took I had to take a couple of runs at it. There was a period when I went back to my hometown and worked for a while, and then after college, I stuck around and drove a taxi cab for a while before actually trying to go into teaching. So there's that.
That has to provide a whole bunch of storylines right there, I would imagine.
There are a couple of things. There was the time I accidentally, I've told this story before, but I accidentally helped somebody escape from jail one time. I was sitting up on the square waiting, as one does at 5 o'clock in the morning, for a fare to wander by. And a gentleman wearing nothing but tidy whiteys climbed into the cab. And before I could refuse him, he was there. And he said, "I just got out of jail." To ask him any further for any further details, so I drove him home. And the next day, somebody from the police department came by the cab stand and wanted to talk to my boss about people giving people rides away from the jail. And I did not get in trouble that time, but I was very wary about who I left in the who I let ride in the cab after that. You know, I didn't mention earlier that a few years ago, I met Janine in a writer's group, and after a while, we started dating and eventually got married. The first time I met her, she had Gianna with her, and Gianna was in one of those little carrying baskets. So she was a very, very little baby at the time, and little did I know that this was my future family and the highlight of my life.
So, Michael, was your family funny? Because there's so much humor in your writing. So did you grow up around, or were you the funny person in the family?
No, oddly enough, a lot of the storytelling comes from my stepfather, whose name is Bill, who's a natural storyteller. And he's pretty humorous without really trying to be. And a lot of the way I learned how to talk and put words together actually came from him, because he was and remains very well spoken, and just, you know, hardly opens his mouth, but he finds himself telling a story, usually an extremely I don't want to say inappropriate, that's not the word, but a very often off color and
a little body.
Janine sometimes doesn't know what to think about these people. Early on, I think they might have shocked her a little bit, but now she's quite used to it. They might be down to their level a little bit, for all I know.
So let's go over to Janine. Why don't you tell us about your story from how you got from where you were to where you are now?
I come from a family where my mom had a 151 IQ. And in terms of, she only had a high school education. Both of my parents grew up during the Great Depression. But she was valedictorian of her small class in rural Minnesota. And I grew up in a household where there was dictionary warfare, and where when my mom would pull out the hardback dictionary and look, she was usually the one who was correct. So, and when it came to grammar, she certainly would correct mine. And my parents always spoke to me as an adult. So that was advantageous in terms of building English skills. My dad only had an eighth grade education. His father died of the first documented case of Huntington's chorea during the Great Depression, and my dad, even though he was the youngest, he had to drop out and take care of his mom and three siblings. My dad was a carpenter, so he had the practical math thing going. But of the family members, he was the most creative. So he loved wordplay and a lot of my creativity, and he was what I've always described as a TTT, a teller of tall tales, the term that came down with the family. So all the kind of like puns and love, which actually came from him. So I was born and raised on the south side of Chicago in Riverdale, Illinois. And I was always a reader. I loved reading. Education was starting to be lost on me. And then probably one or two handfuls of classmates and I were taken into a program that was for fourth through sixth graders run by a teacher named Mrs. Zucker, who was a grade teacher. And it was gifted literature. And so instead of diagramming sentences and doing things on prepositions and whatnot, we were able to read books, do reports on them that related to character, moods, setting, and plot, and then make creative projects in relationship to them. And she had us start writing stories and poems there. And not unlike wonderful husband, my work ended up in the local paper, helped me to see myself as a writer. And that's where it began. I mean, part of me always just kind of, I said journalist back then, or detective, because I was a big Sheldon fan. I inherited those books from my significantly older sister. But they both involve that kind of questioning that a writer needs. And it was my favorite subject in high school. I did it in college. But I majored in literature because as a first generation college student, I really didn't know how to research and find the cornfield in Iowa that would have led to a creative writing degree back then. And so as a college student, my first internship was as an editorial assistant for an advertising trade magazine in Chicago. So I cut my teeth there in more than one regard. First, it was the first time I used a computer, first time I used a design program, first time I had to make something good enough to be publication. And I learned just a lot of lessons on writing from that. And then my first job outside of college was as a speech writer for the China and Taiwan's unofficial consulate in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I continued to learn there, but it was a nice gig. I had a nice office space where I could see like half of Chicago out my window when it wasn't a cloudy day on the 57th floor of the Prudential 2 building. But I went back for a master's degree, not knowing really wanted to write. And once again, I ended up taking a slightly different path. I fell in love with teaching college English, and I stayed in college after my master's degree. In college English, but I never lost the writing bug. And eventually I went back and earned an MFA in creative writing. And I have found a kind of a marriage between teaching and writing ever since then.
And so did it lean more toward poetry, or was it also story-based as well?
It was story-based as well. It's kind of interesting because I think my first publications were poetry. But I have never formally studied it. I decided I planned to have fiction concentration. And then I learned about creative nonfiction. Right. And so my concentration is in CN. I kind of dabble in a little bit of everything related, and my publications reflect that.
Yeah. Poetry sometimes springs from, like for me, I write a lot of poetry, but I don't necessarily think of it that way. It just kind of springs forth without much thought. It's like I can't stop it from happening, just like I can't make it happen. It's not like I can sit down and write a poem like I can write a story. Like,
I understand that perfectly. It's with the you can't make it happen. There's a quote, and I've lost who said it, but it basically is, and a gardener doesn't decorate his roses. I'm paraphrasing poorly, but you can't force it. And when it does come to poetry, if I am feeling, when I have the strongest feelings, it's poetry is almost like a conduit onto the paper first thing. And I think a lot of people feel that way. So it's my go-to form for high emotions. But I try ultimately for a published draft to go for, not saying I always achieve it, but I try for a decent balance between thought and feeling.
Right. And you can feel it in The Weight of Silence, especially because, yes, it's a book of poetry, but it reads to me like I'm right there in that place, like I'm actually there, or it's a story rather than poems, you know, even though, yes, it's a poem and intellectually I know it's a poem, but your use of the language and phrasing really brings me there. Like one line that especially always sticks with me is the eyes of dryness of straw carrying. It's just like so incredibly beautiful and moving. But, you know, all the poems in The Weight of Silence are so deep.
Janine, before we get off you're the poet laureate of Highland, Indiana. Tell us how that came to be.
I am a former poet laureate.
Okay.
It was a position that I had to apply for and provide samples, and it went before a review board of my peers. And so at the time I became the second poet laureate of Highland. And at the time it was only a 1-year position. They've since switched it to 2 years. But it was wonderful. I connected with Highland, the librarians and small business owners of cafes and galleries, and of course the residents of Highland and those in surrounding communities in ways I hadn't been able to before. And so it was a very rich experience, and hopefully I tried to have as many events that would appeal to as many different demographics as possible, because I was supposed to be raising awareness of poetry to get people beyond thinking it either had to sound like Dr. Seuss or was irrelevant and written by old, by dead white men who loved nature. So it was a lot of fun.
Back to you, Michael. Tell us a little about your writing journey, how you got into writing, some of the things you did. You're mostly focused on short fiction.
Well, during the last of my time in Athens, actually while I was still a college student, I had the opportunity to take some poetry classes from Wayne Dodd and Tom Andrews, who were well-known excellent Ohio poets, and I fancied myself a poet at the time, and we had some amazing moments. Wayne Dodd was and still is someone who just feels a deep connection with things and also has an excellent sense of humor. And so there were moments that kind of drew me in. Like one day during a break in the class, we were standing by an open window, and not too far from the building in which we found ourselves, there's another building that has a clock tower, and there's a giant sycamore tree. And Wayne was in the middle of expostulating about the sycamore tree, and he said, what a magnificent living thing. He said, don't you want to just worship that? It's just something you want to worship. And right in the middle of when he was talking, the bell in the clock tower just went, ba-doom, ba-doom. He said, oh, come on, before you know it, we're going to all be dead. And it was just his way of looking at things and the humor and the depth and the connection really drew me in. But it didn't change the fact that I wasn't a very good poet. I did actually I have a couple of things published in those days. I think I sort of lucked into maybe a decent poem or two, but it turned out Wayne asked me one time, he said, you're really into stories, aren't you? You're really into narrative. Maybe that's your thing. And I think now he was probably encouraging me away from poetry as much as he was encouraging me to write.
I don't know. Your phrasing is quite poetic though, even within all that humor. I really, you know, it really, just like with Janine's poems, there are sentences in all your books that just really are just, they resonate so deeply and they're so poetic, you know? So
I think
you have a good balance of both.
Well, thank you. Well, I think where some of that comes from, and I'm going to tell a lowbrow story on myself that doesn't come from my family and their way of storytelling. I had an aha moment, and it was a movie. It was Oliver Stone's The Doors, and I remember sitting in the movie theater, and the movie opens. There's a desert scene filmed from a helicopter, and there's a line from one of The Doors' songs. It's based on the poetry, if you want to call it that, of Jim Morrison, and he said, "Out here on the perimeter, there are no stars." Which is not a great line of poetry, but it was expansive and had a lot of unity to it. And ever since I heard that, it changed the way I write. I would love to claim that it was something from Thomas Wolfe or something like that, but it wasn't. It wasn't even from listening to the music. It was from watching the darn movie. And so from then on, I wanted to try to work that kind of lyricality into my writing whenever possible and to never be happy with it unless it had that, which means I've thrown away a lot of bad writing. Anyway, I did start writing stories. I started reading a lot of stories, first and foremost, the kind that you find in literary journals. And then I'd always read short stories by the greats, starting out with the dead white men that Janine Right. And I got lucky. I had a story published in the Baltimore Review, and then I had and that was just wonderful. And then I had another story published in, the Carolina Quarterly, which were way better publications than I think I had a right to expect at the time. And then I started, for about 8 years, I worked on a novel, and this novel is unpublished. It's called Apollo's Ghost, and it's lovingly referred to as The Cube, because when I finished it, it was well over 200,000 words long. Back then, I thought that was a big novel. By then, I had attracted the attention of an agent. There was a story I wrote that got an agent. My agent's name is Michelle Brower, and she contacted me, and she decided she wanted to work with me. She really liked my style. So she said, what have you got that's full length? And so I sent her The Cube. And she contacted me back, and she said, when I first opened it up, I thought, well, this can't be the book. He sent me a stuffed animal or something. So she said, oh, my God, no, it really was the book. And she said, I can't sell this, but I'd still really, really like to work with you. What else have you got? And I had an idea at the time for a book based on, I wanted to write a biography of the devil, basically. And she said, you should send me that. And I said, well, it's not written yet. And she said, well, when do you think it'll be written? And so I gave her a date, which never do that, because they turn it into a deadline. Anyway, it wasn't very long. It was done within a year. And then within 6 months, we had a publisher with Echo, which is an imprint of HarperCollins. And that book went over very, very well. It got starred reviews. It got wonderful.
It's a great book.
It didn't sell very well, although oddly enough, it's now been published in Germany, and it just came out just like within the last couple of weeks in Italy.
It's so philosophical. I find it so philosophical.
Well, thank you. It was supposed to be kind of a portrait of America. If you're familiar at all with the story of the devil and Daniel Webster, that was kind of the seed of the book. So I was trying to look at America through the eyes of a character who was way older, who was kind of a folk hero, who was kind of in nature and with time and with God in an adversarial kind of way. So, but it's been interesting because the Italian publisher has forwarded interest for two interviews with Italian journalists. And the first one I did, and it has since come out in Italian language Esquire. And then the second one, it's supposedly going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. But it's with a journalist with a classic communist magazine called Il Manifesto. So I'm looking forward very much to my interview with the Italian communists about the devil book.
But Mike, tell them about the review from Italy you received recently from a third publication.
Oh, yeah, there's somebody recently wrote a review, which I don't know quite how good the translation is, but at one point in time they said, "Horror splashes like a happy fish in the waters of irreverence or blasphemy or
blasphemy." Something.
I immediately, I was delighted and forwarded that immediately to Janine.
Yes. Mike and I were dating Mike Gianna and I were dating. He was, while he was writing Up Jumps the Devil, mainly at a Borders in South Lake Mall. And I love, well, he started, he was writing The Cube when I met him, and I fell in love with him and his writing at the same time. But it was neat to go on the journey of his first novel being published. He called me he was visiting his father in Arizona when he received the news of the publication. And so I heard about that, and we were married by the time the book came out, and celebrated that day with everything from devil's food cake to if it was devil related, we did it that day.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Michael, before we get to part, you're also teaching. Do you teach in Highland? Or?
Oh, I teach over in South Highland, Illinois, which at a junior high school where I've taught for since the fall of 1998, however long that is. It's over 20 years. And I've taught 7th grade language arts. I've taught 6th grade everything. I actually taught math at one point, which should never have happened, but I managed. And then the guy who was teaching social studies retired, which I had been very much looking forward to. And he was a good teacher and everything, but I wanted his job, and I've taught social studies ever since then. And it's my dream job. I tell stories for a living. We talk about civics. We talk about everything from government to, like, well, this week we're focusing on how to use your voice to help create change in the world, and with the election as a backdrop to that. I actually last week I went to Washington to take part in a protest, and I kind of took the kids along with me by way of taking photographs and making videos with my phone. And then yesterday I kind of threw a virtual field trip for them, where I had, you know, people that I met in Washington talking to the camera and speaking to the kids about using your voice and whatnot. And I kind of got off track there a little bit, but teaching is very meaningful to me for that reason, is because I'm able to take the things that I love and the things that really light me up and try to get the kids to just be on fire to learn and be involved in the world. And if I can retire feeling like I did that, I will be a happy fellow.
Janine's story also, I mean, it just takes that one teacher to change your life or spark your imagination. It's like, it's such an important job. And with both of you, I really adore, like, the balance of both of you, the writing, whether poetry or novels. So where, or how do you feel, and this is for both of you, how do you feel your styles intersect? Do you bounce things off of each other? How do you think you've interfaced in between both of your disciplines?
We are very, very, very different. Janine uses, I should really let her talk about this, and I will, but I believe she views her writing as a means to creating change in a very direct way. It was like when you used to walk into the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago, and it was as if the art was like shaking you by the collar and saying, hey, these are things that are problems. These are changes that need to happen. And her writing does that. I mean, in Weight of Silence, you know, it's a book about Haiti that says, look, here are some things that are beautiful, and here are some things that we need, that everyone needs to pay attention to. And she's very direct about that. You can't be that direct in a novel, I don't think. And so I would flatter myself if I thought that in a lifetime of writing I contributed one tenth as much as she will in a couple of books. But that's what we revolve around when we share things with each other. It's about the language, but it's also about the job, the getting things done of trying to make the world a better place.
I, of course, feel, Mike, you know, like today I received a notification of a release for an anthology that I've contributed to. And they sent $25 to my PayPal account for the contribution. So I always joke, okay, I've earned $25, we can retire now. But Mike is the one who makes the money with his writing. But I'm saying this because due to his sense of humor, and his humor makes anything more palatable. And so he contributes in indirect ways to a much wider audience than I do. I have more of a niche market. And so I disagree with my husband's statement that I contribute more than he does. Yeah. But I did like Mike was talking about Wayne Dodd, and I did attend essentially a historically Black MFA program. Where writing is Chicago State University. Where writing is seen as an agent of social change. I studied under Hakeem Ahabuti from the Black Power Movement, the Black Arts Movement within the Black Power Movement, and Kelly Norman Ellis, those two especially, Sandra Jackson Opoku. And so that did impact, that influenced my writing. That and James Baldwin's essay, The Creative Process, that I read in high school, where he says it's the writer's responsibility to make the world a more humane dwelling place. And I never thought about I was in high school, I was a junior, I was 16 or so, and I never thought about a writer actually having a responsibility. So that was eye-opening. Mike and I are able to talk process. We're able to be in writing groups together. Our processes are much different, but because we can compare and contrast them, I'm actually able to use that when I teach creative writing and explain there is no correct process. And I'll say I'm a builder and my husband is a slasher, and I make him sound like he's in some horror movie, but
yeah.
He cuts more I write. So we can go from personal to writing and back kind of seamlessly. So it's a wonderful partnership in that regard, and others, of course.
Away from your writing for a minute, how long have you guys been married?
10 years this summer.
Okay, very good. Let's move on.
It does not seem like 10 years. It is the fastest part of my life. As far as, I mean, everything just streaming. I don't think it would be a surprise to Janine for me to say that, you know, we have a really happy marriage. We have a great time in this house. We laugh a lot. We have conversations. It's a small house, so we know how and when to leave each other alone.
We didn't know before COVID. We certainly know now.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, since you brought up about the pandemic, how's that impacted you, in terms of your routine and things like that, both personally and maybe even in your writing? Has it influenced you at all?
Mike?
I know I was expecting at the very beginning of it that I was going to have a great deal more time to devote to writing. That has not turned out to be true, because it's made teaching, there's a lot more work that goes into online teaching than goes into just walking into the classroom to try to make it palatable to the kids and also just the preparation. You have to prepare differently. You have to prepare the lesson, and you have to prepare the technology. Anyway, long story short, it has not resulted in great gobs of writing getting done. I would have said at one point that I didn't think it was affecting me very much. I always kind of wanted to have the extra time and to be left alone more and everything. But I'm finding that I generally feel worse about things than I did before, and I think it's getting to me more than I thought it would. I think I'm actually developing a form of cabin fever, which is a surprise to me. It's more of an effort for me to be pleasant than it was before, and to make sure that I'm not aggravating the people around me, whether that's at work or at home. So on the whole, it hasn't been a real good thing.
So is Gianna, is she taking her classes all at home? Is she doing online classes?
She is. Her regular high school was really going back and forth last minute about, you know, the in-person or the online and the methodology. And we actually enrolled her in an online university for this year. It's Indiana University High School. So it's been a fortunate thing. Yes. So, and she's getting some art done as well. She's learning some valuable lessons about time management, because she is on her own in terms of scheduling and completing the coursework. So
So has she had more time to pursue, and maybe she wants to answer this. Gianna, do you have more time to pursue the digital arts, and have you found anybody online to help you progress with that? Or do you do it all on your own?
About this, actually. Throughout, there have definitely been roadblocks, art blocks, definitely. But I feel as though my art from the first half of this year and my art from the second half of this year has improved 100-fold. I've recently gone on Twitter and started posting my work. And though you might think a more picture-oriented social media platform like Instagram would be more catered towards artists, I think Twitter is actually a bit better on there because you'll make friends easier. So not only has my art changed and improved throughout quarantine, I've also made a lot of new online friends that have been keeping me busy besides my terrible school.
I know that's like, actually, that's like one of the things about this global pandemic is that we have an opportunity to become a global community, and our friends are now, they're all over the world who we're sharing art with, and that's been like one of the, you know, like the balancing of the devastation of this pandemic is hopefully going to lead us to continue to be a global community. So do your other friends, so everybody's sharing art as well as, are you writing together? Are you in any sort of like role-playing groups where you can activate the writing?
I do not write. I am a visual artist, and though I do love poetry, yes. Okay. This guy. I do like writing and poetry, but it isn't my main thing. Yeah. We are in two very different genres of artistic prowess.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
So what kind of digital art do you like to do? And do you also, is that the only form of art you like, or do you like to draw or paint or?
Okay, I've been doing digital art for a very long time. So let's say that for 1 year or two, maybe I probably did more traditional art, but mm-hmm. that was when I was first starting out, and I was first starting out in fourth grade. So you can say that the digital media has grown with me. So I feel very attached to doing digital art. However, I do love painting, and I admire people who do traditional art because it's so very intricate and complex, and I really admire that.
Gianna, what kind of tools do you use for digital art?
Yeah, that was going to be my question too.
Well, throughout quarantine, that has been my thing too, is I've been switching between digital art programs because during the school year, my school iPad actually had a drawing program on it. So that's what I used because I was drawing on my phone before. So then I moved to an iPad. And then after school was done, we had to return our iPads. And it's just like, well, what am I going to do now? So eventually, I got a tablet. I got a drawing tablet for Christmas that connects to my computer. So I have a really big screen. And that's just one of the physical tools I use. Now here comes the programs. I was using a free software called MetaBang for a very long time. And then I decided I needed a switch. So I tried Photoshop. But Photoshop is for editors, really. It's very overhyped in the art industry. It's just like, well, if you don't have Photoshop, then your art's not any good. You have to have Photoshop. But I switched to a much cheaper program called Clip Studio Paint, and it's been wonderful. It knows what artists want. They know what the tools artists want for their drawings. So I've been using it. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, and Photoshop really is really ideally for photo editing. You're right. Illustrator probably comes a little bit closer to that. But again, that's for producing commercial art more than, fine art. So tell us a little bit of the inside thing of living with Michael and your mom.
Oh, well, I hate to break it to y'all, but it's not that interesting.
What a shock.
They function as normal parents. I guess you could say that they are different because they have a very big focus on education, setting goals for yourself, reading. They love, always they want me to read, which I enjoy. So it's not really a problem for me. And Mike summed it up. He said, we have a lot of laughs. We have a great time. And I guess one of the many quirks of having writers slash teacher parents is they have like these little rituals, especially Mike. Mike is just full of rituals and traditions and little knickknacks that he has on the side of his couch, which has these like both low statues or like Star Wars Lego things or bottle openers. He's just like, I need these to write better. So,
yes, inspiration.
So I guess you could say we have a really good view of the intricate writing process of these two.
Do you guys play games or stuff? Are there any, you know, so like, do you have like game night that's word-based?
Sure, we play Scrabble sometimes. And then we have to argue about who's making up words and who's not. It's really
riveting. Try to get away with it and can't.
Oh, Dixit, yes. Dixit's wonderful. You have
wordplay,
and it like combines visual elements and writing elements. So it's like storytelling, but with cards, and it's wonderful. Play Dixit.
Yes. Oh, there's a lot of reading of things like Edgar Allan Poe stories. And, you know, we went haunted Indiana one year. So, but a lot of oral storytelling, I think, too.
I know we did like the poetry magnets when the kids were really little, you know, and I always loved waking up to see what lines of poetry were on the refrigerator.
Those are fantastic.
So what are you looking forward to after the pandemic? I mean, if you've been pretty much sheltering in place for the most part, what's something you're looking forward to doing?
Getting on a train and going to museums in Chicago.
Janine?
Yeah. The pandemic for me, I had to choose projects wisely because I felt vulnerable and depressed at the beginning in spring and the BLM protests and in June, it just all was so heavy. So I chose to write a short travel memoir. So I was reliving the travel, which kind of helped with my wanderlust. The pandemic, of course, has been heavy and hard. I'm on Facebook more than Mike is, so I think I have more contact with the outside world in that regard. But I would say that I've also tried as much as possible to take advantage of as much virtual professional development and as many author readings as possible. And until the school year started, it was also a great time for reflection in the summer, which I don't normally have as much time for. But then the school year started. Yeah. Travel. I want the museums, but I just want to get in the car and go on an adventure.
Right. We're also looking forward to being permitted by the rest of the world to leave the United States and go travel abroad. We're hoping that will happen at some point. We had plans to travel in the British Isles and really everywhere. So we're ready to go.
It's usually the other countries that have not been accepting people from the States.
That's what I'm saying. We're like, please, can we come over there? Let us out of here for a little while. And for a while, the answer is still going to be no. I'm afraid.
We interviewed a Grammy Award winning musician who's from South Africa who is stuck in Australia because you can't leave. Fortunately, you can stay at his son's house, but he's stuck there because they're just not letting people in or out of Australia at all.
Wow.
So any projects you're looking forward to doing? We're getting close to wrapping up here. First, Michael, anything you have on the front burner?
I have a number of projects that I'm working on. Right now, I'm trying to write a fantasy novel, just, you know, with swords and wizards and things like that, with hopefully some social relevance in there. But I thought it was going to be a quick, easy project, and I'm now into the second year of it. And my agent told me that she said she really liked the book. She thought, you know, she said we're gonna sell this and everything, but it needs a lot of work. And she assigned me a whole bunch of books to read, excellent fantasy books. And so between work and doing my homework for her, That's my project at the moment, is reading and becoming a better fantasy writer. And when I'm done with that, then I will finish that book. And then I've got another one that I've been working on for like 4 years that I'll work on. So the projects go to and beyond the horizon.
And Janine, real quick, anything you're looking forward to doing?
I must add to Mike's that Mike's second project makes the cube look small. Anyway, I'm finishing up the short travel memoir / guide. I'm finishing up a memoir, and I'm hoping next summer to return to an actual full-length memoir that I needed to let get very cold and return to. It's called Queen of Lilac Time.
Yeah. Can you quickly give us your websites? Because I know you both have one. Michael?
MichaelPore.live.
Okay, and that poor is P-O-O-R-E.
Right, P-O-O-R-E, just like no money with an E on the end.
And Janine?
JanineHarrison.com, and it's J-A-N-I-N-E.
Do we have a minute for me to end with one of Michael's, something from Up Jumps the Devil, which is, you'd be surprised how much of your happiness has to do with little problems. So it's sort of like a pandemic thought.
Okay. Well, we'd like to thank you again, Michael Poore and Janine Harrison, along with Gianna, who is also updated us on that. Thank you very much for coming on Art on the Air.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Larry and Esther.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
You've been listening to Art on the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week. Art on the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP and Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, our landlord, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary Levan, Arts Patron. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself.